I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words.
Patricia T. O'Connor joins me now. She's the author of a number of books on the English language, and she visits us once a month to talk about the language. We take your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And you can also, because some of you are not going to have your questions addressed, you can email Pat directly at her mailbox. In fact, it's mailbox@grammarphobia.com. And remember how to spell grammar. I got another email for you, addressed to you, and somebody said that they had a grammar question, G-R-A-M-M-E-R. Grammar is one of the more misspelled words, isn't it?
It is. I think we've fixed things now so that if people misspell it in our address, we still get the mail.
And people also can see a selection of the language questions from our listeners on your blog.
Yes.
But you want to talk about science and the language.
Signs. How, I don't know, have you ever wondered why the language in signs is so bad? It's often...
Signs. I thought you said science.
Signs, as in semiotics,
as in signage.
Billboards. Signage, yes. It's often ungrammatical, badly punctuated, badly worded, confusing, for one reason or another, stupid. And, you know, we all make mistakes when we're in a hurry, when we're speaking rather than writing, or even if we're writing in a hurry. But signs aren't really done in a hurry. So you'd think they would be perfect, right? But far from it. And over the years, I've collected some things that WNYC listeners have sent. And here's an example. I brought it along. A listener named Patricia sent me this a while back, and she even sent a photo. And as you can see, it is a photo of a sign that's mounted in the produce section of a food town in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. And it says, yeah, go ahead and read it.
Please wash all fruit and vegetables before being consumed.
Yes. Now, obviously, it's a nicely done sign. It's laminated. Somebody put some thought into it, but not into the words themselves.
Well, this is something that can really eat at you.
And I looked up a few other things that listeners had sent in over time. And actually, this one I just got a few days ago. An NPR listener in Iowa saw a sign saying, "No trespassing without permission." And, of course, the familiar store closing sign, "Going out for business." And here's one I like. A store that has a sign saying, "All items, 99 cents and up."
Well, it's true. But that's accurate. All the items are 99 cents and up.
And here, listeners from a listener's former veterinarian's office, a sign for patrons, "Please leave fecal samples upon entering."
Boy.
And there are a few more, but you get the idea. It just rather amazes me that when people have signs made, they don't give a little more thought to it.
Well, perhaps they give the job to somebody who has a nice handwriting or knows how to work the computer, but doesn't necessarily know how to spell.
But you think you'd give instructions, you'd write something out. I've heard of people who had signs made for their stores where the name of the business was misspelled, but they left it because it would cost too much to correct it. So I don't know. There you go. Maybe.
Well, the sign does tell something about your business to customers. Of course, in many cases, the customers could look at that sign and understand it the way it was intended, not only exactly. a few people will see it as something that's funny.
Right, right.
But, you know, this has inspired us to think about a new listener contest, one that we've asked you to judge.
Mm-hmm.
We're asking our listeners to take pictures of signs that have bad English, whether it's a word that's been misspelled or misused or has bad grammar or misplaced punctuation. And the apostrophe is probably the most abused of all punctuation marks, always put in the wrong place.
Sure.
And all that's required to enter is to take a picture of the sign or signs that annoy you the most, and then go to our show page and submit your photo. Follow the instructions. Submit your photo by Friday, July 16th. So you have a little while to do this. And then Pat will choose her favorites. And if yours is selected, you can join us on the air on Wednesday, July 21st to discuss your sign. For more information, go to our show page. And we already have some photos of signs there to give you some inspiration. But we're sure that there's just so much material out there. We're going to be inundated.
I'm sure you will. It's a very rich trove of bad English.
Should we take some calls?
Yes, let's do.
Well, first, maybe we'll talk about something that somebody left on our as a comment on our show page. Estelle in Austin asks, "What's the rule about using might versus may?" A lot of people are confused about this, as in this might happen versus this may happen.
Well, those are both correct. The only difference is one of, and it's a slight difference, of the degree of probability. And this is getting weaker and weaker all the time, this distinction. But if you say something may happen, it may rain tomorrow, supposedly that's a stronger probability than it might rain tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And I think most of us would instinctively know that.
I think we probably would. But if you stop to think hard about it, the distinction becomes harder to see. Yeah.
Well, I may have to go to the store for this, or I might have to go to the store for this. Uh-huh. Pretty much the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, there are differences in the past tense. But it's not correct that you can't use may in the past tense. You can say he may have broken his leg, or he might have broken his leg. Now, there's another twist to this. Say someone is injured and doesn't quite get to the emergency room on time for their emergency surgery and doesn't make it. Sad story. If you say surgery might have saved him or surgery may have saved him, if you say may have saved him, it implies that he got there on time and he was saved. But if mm-hmm. you say surgery might have saved him, it implies that he didn't get it. So there are some subtleties about may and might. It's not a short subject.
Let's go to another call. Hugo from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Should I turn the radio down?
Yes, please. It'll just confuse you because we're on a bit of a delay.
Okay, sorry. Oh, thanks for having me on. My question is, when referring to something written, do you say it says or it reads?
You can say it says. Actually, I had a question about this once. Someone wondered whether it's correct to, when you're quoting something from a book, to say it says here. Because obviously the writer isn't speaking, he's writing. But according to the Oxford English Dictionary, say, to tell, a lot of these verbs that have to do with speaking also are by inference applied to writing as well. So you can say it says here, or as so-and-so tells us in his book.
Well, I often will be interviewing someone and say, you say in your book.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's perfectly.
But I can just as easily say, you write in your book.
Yeah, right.
Okay?
But it's okay.
Yes, thank you.
Our next caller is Maureen from the Bronx. Hi, Maureen. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you. My question is, what started people writing phonetically and completely disregarding the English language when they do emails?
This is something you have actually have written a whole book about with your husband, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes. We did write a book called You Send Me about online writing. That's a big question. Why did they do it? I suppose it's because it's easier than spelling correctly.
But, like, is somebody responsible? How did it come about?
I don't know that we can blame anyone. I assume that those people who are writing phonetically online would have written phonetically if they were writing a note or something.
Oh, really?
Not online.
Oh,
I don't think you can blame the medium.
I didn't think of that.
But something has changed over the last 15 or 20, maybe a little longer. I first started seeing it in the way some rock song titles were written, where people were playing with the language. It seemed to be more playful than anything else, not an attempt to get past not knowing how to spell.
Well,
but
then true too.
And that shows up in a lot of emails as well.
Right, especially when people are writing to good friends, and younger people when they're writing to good friends might use playful spellings and playful punctuation and all that sort of thing in emails, just because it's part of the game. But I can't say that we can point a finger at anybody in particular. And I don't think this is corrupting the language. I'm not wringing my hands over this. And I think the fact that people are writing more because we're now wired is all to the good.
Well, in the case of an email message, you're sending it to somebody you know, and you know how far you can push things. But if you were writing a business letter, that kind of thing would not be acceptable.
True. And even young kids know this. They aren't going to send their application essays to Harvard written the same way that they would text an email to a girlfriend or something.
You don't write LOL in your Harvard application.
No.
Or you shouldn't anyway if you're planning to apply to Harvard. Maria from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I know that you ask people to take a picture of funny signs and send it in, but this is a place that's long since gone. It was a butcher store, and the sign read, "We have no brain. We only have brains on Thursday." And I couldn't resist calling and adding that.
No, we appreciate that.
I'll bet the butcher did that deliberately. Yeah,
I think so?
He was probably
pulling
people's legs. Well, he probably couldn't resist making it funny.
Well, thank you for calling us. And we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll be taking more of your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're talking about language with Patricia T. O'Connor. Tonight, WNYC brings you the 29th annual Bloomsday performance of James Joyce's groundbreaking novel, Ulysses, at Symphony Space. The more than 50 readers include Stephen Colbert, Blair Brown, and Fionnuala Flanagan as Molly Bloom. Tune in tonight at 8 on 93.9 FM WNYC. And talking about language, James Joyce sure loved to play with that. Tomorrow night at Town Hall, Terry Gross will share stories from her life and career, from her 4 decades behind the microphone, among doing something like 10,000 interviews for Fresh Air. And you'll get to ask her the questions at a Q&A moderated by Brian Lehrer. Tickets at the events page at WNYC.org. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
What I'd give to hear those 3 little words.
The man they call the Velvet Fog, Mel Torme. And that reminds me that some people will call him complaining about usages like Velvet Fog. And then our conversation usually leads to the more poetic aspects of the language. But there are people who really insist on the language being totally literal.
Yeah, I think you can take it. You can take that too far. I mean, it's nice to use language with precision, but at the same time, one of the benefits of language is that you can use it metaphorically. You can paint images with it. You can use it poetically. You can apply one idea to mean something else, and that's part of its charm.
A listener points out that some people misspell on purpose so they can copyright the name of the word.
Well, I don't know. I think if it's a popular misspelling, I think you'd have a hard time copywriting it.
Our next caller is Lynn from Queens. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, I guess I did give my name. Okay. Yeah.
Did you want to be anonymous?
What?
Anonymous from Queens.
Thank you. Okay, many years ago, I lived in Manhattan in the low 50s, and on 2nd Avenue, there was an Irish pub. In front, they had a chalkboard sign, and for many years, it said, "Live Enterment on Thursdays." They meant to say entertainment, but they spelled it E-N-T-E-R-M-E-N-T.
Live Enterment.
Live Enterment on Thursdays. I never
sounds like Edgar Allan Poe.
I love that.
Well, it sounds to me like it was some kind of a trap.
I wouldn't go there.
To be buried alive, yes.
Thank you so much for calling us. Too bad that that's not around. You probably would have done well in the contest. And a reminder that we do have this contest. You want to tell us about it?
Yes. We're inviting people to take photos of favorite signs that either have bad grammar, bad punctuation, bad wording, or they're otherwise stupid in some way, and send the photographs to go to the website, the WNYC that Leonard will have a link there on his show page, and it'll tell you how to file your photo.
And then you'll pick the favorites.
I'll pick a favorite.
And then we will talk to the winners on July 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Again,
I think so.
If you want more information about it or just to enter, if you already have a picture, just go to our show page. We already have some photos there that might inspire you. An English major turned neon sign maker comments that most store owners just don't seem to care whether their signs are grammatically correct or not.
Yes. Does he want to speak or just
no? That was written in.
You may have heard
the spelling is all correct.
You may have heard of a couple of guys who were arrested maybe either last year or the year before at the Grand Canyon for correcting a sign that it turned out the sign was of historic importance, and they didn't know it was a hand-painted sign. But they've written a book, and the publisher sent me a galley. It's coming out in August. But they also, in their book, they say that they ran across quite a few storekeepers who could care less. I shouldn't say that. They couldn't care less the store sign was incorrect, even if it was the name of the business. Mm. They just didn't care, and often threw the guys out. They weren't even welcome to point it out. And that happened to you too once.
Yeah,
at a bakery,
I told the story about somebody. I can't remember what it was, but he had misused the language and said something rather funny.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you know, you really might want to change that sign. And he said, the way people waste their time and energy. He was really annoyed with me. Just the other day, I saw at a favorite restaurant, Maine Lobsters being advertised, M-A-I-N.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
I told the host at the door that they should put an E at the end of Maine. And she looked at me like I was crazy. So, oh, well. I'm not naming the restaurant. Our next caller is it Umaru?
Yes.
Hi, Umaru from Manhattan. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Oh, I'm in Manhattan. I'm from Africa, and I love your show. Actually, I'm learning English through your show. So English is not my first language. I was wondering to know why, because I went to school in France, in Africa. My country is French country. So in English, they write 2 million, like 5 million, or like in the lottery, or they like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. They don't put no S at the end. But in French, also you can do that. Once is more than one, you got to put S at the end.
Actually, we're inconsistent. We do say minutes,
right,
but we don't say millions.
Oh, that's true. We say 5 million and 500. We don't say 500s. Also, when we use something just as a plain noun, we'll say this takes 5 minutes, but it's a 5 minute cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't always put the plural on.
And do we have any reason for this other than we are those crazy English speakers?
There's probably a reason. I don't know. Did the French put? Do they inflect their adjectives for plural and singular?
Well, the French, of course, may have that S at the end of the word, but they rarely pronounce it.
Yeah, so, once is more than one, you got to put S at the end to show your reader or whoever it is more than one. It's going to be plural.
Now, what was the language you were brought up speaking, Umaru?
My native language, you said?
Yes.
It's Fulani.
Uh-huh.
Well, my country is West Africa. Guinea is a French colonized country. So
sure.
If you go to school, you learn in French. So,
now
here, I see that they put 3 minutes idling or the lottery is $5 million, but they don't put no S at the end of million.
Hmm. Yeah, with numbers, we don't.
Okay.
And I don't know what people do in Fulani, but I'm sure that. There, that French looks inconsistent compared to Fulani, and that's the way language
Fulani,
is.
We don't write down Fulani that much. We write down Fulani through Arabic, like we write the language in Arabic, the Fulani in Arabic, like we use the Arabic letters to write the Fulani.
Ah, so do you speak Arabic as well?
No. We just know the letters, like we can just...
So you could read Arabic, but you don't know what you're reading.
Yeah, I can read the Quran. I can read some Arabic, though, like when it's well written, not like the Egyptian rite or some Iraqi. I can read those.
Thank you so much for calling us.
All right. Thank you very much. I love your show.
And, you know, it takes somebody from the outside to recognize some of these weird inconsistencies in our language. I never would have questioned 8 million.
I wouldn't have either.
I just wish I had it.
I think his English is very good.
Well, he's been listening to the show, especially your segments, Pat.
Oh.
Lynn from Long Island, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We are well, or good, as some people say.
I wanted to comment on one thing. The use of the letter Z in place of the letter S when you have a plural word is very, very frustrating to me. And I was horrified when I saw a sign company, the sign on their business and the name of their business is Signs and Banner. It's S-I-G-N-Z. Middle word instead of and is the letter N, and banners is B-A-N-N-E-R-Z. That's, I don't know about you guys, but that's one business I would not
frequent. That doesn't seem like a very good advertisement for a sign company, does it?
No,
I think they're
really
just trying
doesn't.
To be cute, don't you?
I think they're trying to be cute.
I thought that was pretty funny. I thought you may appreciate that.
Yeah, but boy, it's not, I don't think it's an appropriate kind of cute. You could make another sort of pun that's spelled correctly, I would think. I wouldn't trust those guys. I'd want to see the sign before I paid for it.
Right. But, I mean, this is their own company, and that's their sign. I guess they thought it was cute, so whatever. I do actually have a more serious question.
And then I have a question. You reminded me of something I wanted to ask Pat. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. My question actually off topic, not off this topic. It's toward and towards. What's the difference, and is one correct, and is the other incorrect?
There's no difference, and no, they're both correct. The only thing to say about them is that toward is, and you'll read this, I'm not sure it's true, but we're told that toward is more common in the United States, as well as backward, forward, afterward. All those ward words are more common in the U.S. without the S at the end, but in Britain they're more common with the S at the end, backwards, forwards, afterwards, and so on.
Thank you
for
calling us.
I think that distinction is kind of falling away.
I've noticed that there's a whole group of words that are only known to people who play Scrabble and use the Scrabble dictionary.
Yes, that's true.
It is a totally different dictionary from others, and I wonder whether people now think ZA is a real word or QI. I mean, you get a lot of points with those words.
I know, and serious Scrabble players just sit around memorizing those word combinations. Of course, they have no real meaning, at least not to the Scrabble players. The meanings are irrelevant.
Well, ZA is short for pizza, but I've never heard anybody say, "Let's go get some za."
Now, where do you learn things like this, that za is short for pizza?
Well, you play Scrabble and somebody tells you that.
Oh.
I don't know if it's true. I just trust people. Jack from Manhattan writes in, because of improper language and bad punctuation, spelling on Facebook and Twitter and in text messages, he's taken into checking dictionaries before he posts his.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, but if you do that with spell check, you can wind up with some serious problems.
Right, right. Because
spell check is always trying to force me to use the wrong verb.
Grammar check is even worse.
It's almost like Ebonics at times.
Yes.
And I wonder what's going on there. Why is it telling me that? Why not just give me the leeway?
You know, I use spell check. Because I find it's handy for when I repeat a word. I often, when I'm writing, I will repeat the. I'll write the, for some reason. And it'll find things like that. But I never take its word for anything. I never click, okay, go ahead and correct. Because it probably isn't.
Another listener, Joe from Manhattan, wants to know why there's a certain order to adjectives. You can say big red car, but you can't say red big car, even though that would make just as much sense.
Oh, that's interesting. That may sound like a very simple-minded question.
No, that's why I asked it, because I think it's something that I've wondered about
myself.
That's
a very interesting question. That has to do with syntax, which is word order. And, I think it probably works the same for small. You would put small before the color. And I don't know how that evolved in English, but that's a very interesting question. Why would you say a small green apple rather than a green small apple?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know the answer.
Let's take another call. Norma from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air. Norma, are you there?
She has her radio on.
Okay. Norma, I'm sorry. We're going to have to move on because... Well, we don't have all that much time. I do want to remind listeners that we are asking you to take pictures of signs that have bad English, whether it's a word that's been misspelled or misused as bad grammar or has some misplaced punctuation. Why is punctuation such a problem?
Beats me. I've never found it that mysterious.
There's
to tell you the truth, you just don't use it in plurals.
There's a punctuation difference between U.S. English and British English in that we put the punctuation, we put a comma or a period inside of quotes and they put it outside the quotes, although...
Well, they put it either inside or outside depending upon whether the period or comma is part of the original quotation, and I'm always getting into wrangles about that with people in email. Because I don't think it serves any purpose to tell the reader that the comma was part of the original quotation. And from a reader's point of view, it looks like some commas are in quotes and some are out, and I just think it looks messy. I think the American system is tidier.
You could put that comma there and then three dots, which indicates that you're ending the sentence before it's complete anyway. But then... that leads some people who understand you often put the punctuation inside the quotes to put the wrong punctuation inside the quotes. For example, if they're asking a question, they will put the question mark inside the quote, even though the question mark should be outside the quote.
Yes, yes. And again, it doesn't seem that big a problem to me. Is it the overall sentence that's the question, or is the question just a little part within the sentence? So it shouldn't be that difficult.
Fabio from Montclair. Hi. You have another one of those millions questions?
Well, yeah, and thank you for the great and fun show. What about several thousand and 5,000, or a few thousand, a few millions?
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't usually say millions.
What?
Don't you
use the plural with a few millions?
Yeah, we will
millions?
Say.
Well, we do sometimes. You'll find that in literature sometimes, but it's not mandatory. We'll say,
so
I've heard this, there are a few million people living in the city of New York. Or you can say there are a few millions, but usually the idiomatic form is without the plural.
We only have a few minutes left, and I want to remind people that they can contact Pat by going to mailbox@grammarphobia.com. You can also click on Pat's blog to see a selection of language questions from WNYC audiences. She'll be back with us on the 21st, and she will be announcing the winners to our contests and in pictures of signs that have weird things on them. And Pat, I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
It was my pleasure.
On tomorrow's show, a former skinhead tells us how he was recruited into the American Nazi underground and how he ultimately changed and dedicated his life to fighting hatred. Then the film Hand of Love, about life in Kibera, the largest slum in Kenya, the third largest in the world. Also, William Dalrymple on how modernization has changed traditional forms of religious life in India. Plus, our latest backstory looks at the turmoil in Kyrgyzstan. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakely Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is our executive producer, and we have help today from Theo DeCastri, Johanna Barr, and contributing producer Barbara Kahn. Jason Isaac was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you back here at noon tomorrow.